Hey, you listen to this podcast. Go to myplayvolution.com, click the Amazon icon, bookmark that page, and use it every time you shop on Amazon. It's a way for you to support the show without costing you anything. And it's a win-win-win. Amazon wins because you buy their stuff, and you win because you get stuff. And we win because we get a few pennies per purchase. Win-win-win. What could be better? Come on, do it. Please? Explorations Early Learning has been producing low-tech, high-think toys for years. Check out our yummy wooden delights at explorationsearlylearning.com under the Shop tab. And think about joining the Toy of the Month Club. For a reasonable monthly fee, we ship you a sweet, sweet box of play. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great too. How about you?
Doing good.
Okay. Hey, welcome. Woo-hoo. Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson with Lisa Murphy and Tasha Johnson.
Hi.
Topic for today is tips for presenters. And here's the deal. We've had requests to do this episode because there's people that feel like we might have some stuff to say that they want to hear. But also we feel a little bit weird about doing it because we don't want to put ourselves out there. There are people that do this better than we do, and we don't want to feel that we're perfect at it, and it's just kind of weird. We both felt a little bit weird about the topic, right, Lisa?
And just to kind of repeat, I've been asked actually to consider doing a workshop.
I think it'd be a ton of fun.
I think it would be a ton of fun too, but I'm very hyper aware of the perception that might get attached to that. So usually what I end up doing is having like a one-on-one lunch with somebody who wants to kind of, you know, what to me, I see it as that dissemination of information, right? That pay it forward. And I think I've shared on the pod before that that one woman who spent 3 hours with me kind of assisting me initially. And all she asked for me is I went to like kind of pay her and compensate her for her time. She said, just continue to share what you know. Like if you can assist somebody in not falling down one of the holes, you know, why? And sometimes we need to fall in our own holes. But if I can assist in, you know, I don't know, not falling in a big one. Like, you know, why reinvent the wheel is really the language that I use with a lot of people. So
we're acknowledging we're far from being perfect at this, but we're also acknowledging we've learned some things along the way, and are always working at it, getting it better, and that we might have some things that are worth sharing if you want to listen to them. So where you want to get started?
Well, when Jeff said, hey, I think that this should be the next topic that we record, I'm like, hold on. I need to do something.
Lisa wrote a book.
And then I wrote 16 things.
Available next weekend on Amazon.
Tips for presenters, and in no order. And I don't know, you want me to just kind of barf them out and see if we riff on any of them?
Yeah, let's see where you got. I've got a list too. So.
Okay, so in no particular order, this is just how I barfed them out. The first one is to own the room. Whether you're in a big, huge ballroom, whether you're in a convention center, whether you're in a multipurpose room.
Time out. That sounds expensive. Because you got
to, Mr. Literal. Mr. Literal.
What's that mean?
By own the room, I mean it doesn't matter what kind of venue it is. If the chairs are turned the wrong way, figure it out, make it better, or rearrange them. And if something is distracting you, then figure out how to get it different. You know, if the lights are too low, ask for them to be turned up. And some of this gets taken care of by some of the other points that I'm going to say. But if you walk in the room and let's say you've given them a room setup diagram and they completely botched it, one of the reasons why I get to the venue 90 minutes prior is a little bit of a cushion. So you're not walking in thinking I'm on in 10 minutes and oh my God, the room is completely set up backwards. And, you know, so meaning like if the entrance and exit door is right in my line, like where I am. So the audience is looking at me and also looking at the in and out door. If that's an 8-hour training seminar, that could get a little distracting all day with everybody looking back and forth. So it's own the environment, right? Just like we say in the classroom, control the environment. So I will take the time and flip the chairs that day, not only just for my distraction, and that's really what it comes back to. And most of these items that I've listed down, it's not in any way because there's a diva. It's that control the environment. And if I'm distracted by something, I'm not going to be able to give 110%. Mm-hmm. So it's more of how can I make sure that this space allows me to give you the rockin' best professional development you've ever experienced.
Yeah, yeah. And I think for me, owning the environment has to do a lot with your own body language and confidence when you walk in front of that room, too. Because if you don't walk...
Oh, different kind of own the room. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because if you don't walk in there and let people know that you have something to say and you're there to say it and that you got to exude some sort of confidence or you're going to lose people right away.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where own the room is for me.
Yeah, and I've even coached some people on saying don't start with telling us how nervous you are. You know, it's kind of a given for most personalities that what you're doing is kind of risky, and most people sitting down listening to you would not want to do what you're doing. So there's already an element of seeing you as somebody who is confident and is willing to get up there. So you don't need to lead with telling us, you know, how tired you are or how, you know, scared you were or how nervous you were.
Tell me in the bar afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a big thing. And I think, if you look at lists of, you know, what scares people, public speaking is way up there.
In the United States.
It's a hard thing to do. And so acknowledge that, hey, if you're new at this, you're going to be scared for a while until you build up. Unless you're Lisa Murphy, but most of us mortals we have to do some reps. and so I think that's another tip that I would have is practice.
Oh, I practice.
And I mean, that might be in your bedroom, in your
the steering wheel of my car. When I first started this company could have, if it had recorded
a video camera there.
Oh my gosh. I talked to the steering wheel. I talked to the mirror. I had this whole ritual that if it was the night before a gig when I first got started, nobody was allowed to talk to me. I was in the bedroom sitting on the bed going through everything.
And were you doing it out loud or just in your head?
Both.
See, me,
it's always practice.
In my head, but it's always, you know, I'll sit down sometimes before something and spend 5 minutes meditating, and in that 5 minutes go through the whole day as I'm picturing it and knowing it's going to go different ways, and just to get my head ready for that thing. The other practice thing I think is you got to put in some reps if you want to. And I know we've got some listeners, some regular listeners to the show that are on a trajectory that's leading them to eventual keynoting and that kind of stuff. And the thing you got to do to get there is you got to volunteer for stuff a lot of time, and you got to show up and do breakout sessions and that kind of stuff. So you build some content.
They're not
going to
call
some confidence.
You right away. They will. And that's the evolution, and that's one of the points is to honor your evolution. You know, if you have your sights set on eventually being a national or an international keynote speaker for early childhood, that is absolutely awesome. There is an element, old school theater style, of paying your dues, which means that you're filling out the paperwork and you're submitting it and you're doing gigs for free to get your name out there and get your name out there. People ask, how did you get started, or what was your first step? And I tell them that, and I think they're waiting. I think they expect it to be something different because of how they just saw us. But you've seen me 20 years. My company's going to be 20 years old. Back in the day, I mean, I still have footage of those first few workshops. And you grow, you learn, and you change. And most of them, I wasn't paid for years.
And I think that's another tip. Keep getting better.
Keep getting better.
Because if this is something you want to do long term, if you get to a point and you start resting on your past accomplishments, you just kind of flounder.
It's a lot of the advice I think that Jeff and I think I can speak for you, that we give to the teachers who are sitting in the audience. We hold ourselves accountable to the same input, but it might be just with a speaking lens to it. You know, the minute I wake up and think that I got this shit down is the day that it's just horrible. You know, either there's a lot of travel business or there's some kind of wrench that the universe will throw at me to keep me in check.
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah.
And I can speak to the evolution of my company. One of the things that I think is why I'm still around is that I've only produced new material in response to audience feedback.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to Dallas, right? So I was up there and the presenter was going to talk about this and they were already there. So I talked about that. They apparently needed it and wanted it, or they wouldn't have been to that session in the first place. Mm-hmm. And every workshop since then has been in response to talk about this, instead of me saying, ooh, I'd really like to talk about this. And that might meet the needs of a few people, but it's all been culled from the audience. Just like we say, cull your lesson plans and your activities from what you're observing in the classroom. It's the same bits of advice.
Yeah, and from a business side, you're going to be asked to do more presentations if you're talking about stuff people want to hear about. So it's just practical.
Let me add to that, because it's one of my points that I wrote down too, is not only what the people are hearing, but it still needs to be something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. There are all kinds of topics that people want to hear about that they're just not in my wheelhouse.
They're not in my wheelhouse either. I love that phrase. And that's one of the things I said, too, is that you have to at some point figure out, are you the presenter that is going to create and craft new material if somebody asks you to do that? Or are you the person who's going to have, like, you know, this is my menu of options that you can pick and choose from?
I just realized we
I saw it, you look at what, well, what were you doing?
I was thinking in my head. Because
wow,
that's where I do my thinking. Weeks back, we were referencing strawberry shortcake and chapstick commercials from the 70s and 80s. Wheelhouse goes a lot further. We've gone back to steamboat references.
Wow, we're nerds, but we're old.
It's a history lesson.
So what else you got on your list?
I've got lots on my list, but let me
go ahead. When I interrupted you with my thinking.
No. How dare you think and interrupt me?
Jeez.
But you have to decide some of these things early on and respect, again, your evolution, that you as a speaker, just like as a teacher, might change your mind. You know, mm-hmm. like you used to, maybe you did it this way and now you're evolving to this way. And you have to dialogue and network with other people and try not to see yourself as the keeper of the knowledge of that particular thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with networking with other speakers. You know, just like any profession, you don't want to see them as competitors. You know, we might be all, you know, on the same kind of page philosophically, but we all bring unique things to the table. And I mean, as
and
a presenter,
ways of bringing it to the table at times too, because you guys to me are more entertaining to listen to than some other presenters.
Well,
out there.
That's the practice what you preach. If I'm out there saying playful learning, why would that not translate? And sometimes I think that this to me is it's so simple that it surprises me when I have to explain that to people. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, I enjoyed being here. And I'm like, but that's that subliminal message that I'm giving you all day as to what your classroom should be like. And some of it's really, really subtle. So like, if you're gonna book me to do the workshop where we're talking about the philosophy and the framework and talking about the time and being flexible, but you're the person that is like, but then you must break at 10:45 for snack and you must break. I'm like, no, because that completely undermines what you've supposedly brought me here to reinforce. You know, so my message on stage and off stage, and I say this very humbly because I've been told this as a compliment, that my onstage persona and the offstage persona, they're consistent. And I take that very, very seriously.
Yeah, that continuity is a valuable thing. And I think, like Tasha pointed out, I think part of this job, to do it well, to hold a room, you have to realize, you have to acknowledge and work at the part of this that is the job. Part of the job is being entertaining, because you may be up there to share information, but the reality is, if you're not entertaining, you're going to lose the room. And I mean, the reason I started doing this is because I'd been doing enough presentations where the monotone presenter stood behind the lectern for 90 minutes and read what was on the screen and in the handouts verbatim.
Yeah.
What the hell? My time is worth more than that.
I give what I would want to get.
Exactly.
I give what I would want to receive. And if you're giving us, you know, a Saturday of your life, I mean, let's be real.
Oh, yeah. You know? I was going to mention the time that they have to go to these conferences.
I respect that. Yeah. And if I was sitting in that chair for 8 hours on a Saturday, my only day off perhaps in a month, I better get something that's relevant and meaningful, which again, that's what we're talking about in the classroom. As a teacher, am I creating an environment that's mm-hmm. relevant and meaningful to the kids who are showing up there? So why would that not be doing exactly the same thing?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Let's pat each other on the back. Yeah, yeah. Well, so I joined NSA, like back when I first started speaking, of course, because I'm like that. So I joined the National Speakers Association, and I have, I think, shared off the air with you the two things that for the, you know, however long I was a member, number one was to own the room. That's what's the one thing that I remember them teaching me. So if you do make, this is your room for the next however length of time. So you need to be as comfortable as possible and not be distracted. That I've kept with me since day one. And number two, you need to be who they think about when they think about That yeah. Whatever that is. And for me, that circles back to, which is why right now, and up until this point, I don't craft new material. I mean, I don't do it. You know, oh, Lisa, come and do a music work. You know, that's not my thing. There's thousands of people who do amazing work because that's their passion. Yep. Let me hook you up with a couple of my colleagues who that is their passion, but I just don't do that. I appreciate that you're wanting me to come out and talk to people, but it's not my thing. You yeah. know, it's not what
and
I'm good at.
And for you to know that, that's awesome. Instead of going, yeah, sure, let me do this.
I got a real practical one. You got to remember.
The rest of mine are practical.
This is maybe, the thing you stand behind, the thing they put on stage for you to stand behind, and don't stand behind it, by the way, is a lectern. The podium. The podium is the thing you stand on. A podium is the platform. The lectern.
The riser.
Is, oh. It, so don't call the thing you stand behind a podium because
it's not. And don't stand behind it anyway.
And then,
so and really
then ask
point.
Them. And then ask them. Don't say, hey, can you move this podium off the stage because it's not a podium, it's a lectern. Ask them to move the lectern off the stage and get out from behind that. I know it might make you feel safe, but get over it and move around a little bit because.
And better yet, even work it into the bit somehow, right? So you can be. You could even. I mean that's what I would do is be like, oh my God, these people want me to actually stand behind here and like you make some dramatic thing and push it aside and then come out in the middle of the room. But I mean, that's my MO. And that's, you know, I used to, you know, again, part of my evolution, I remember the first couple of times I did a keynote address and I thought for some reason that I was supposed to have to stand behind yep. that. And I stood there and I'm not even kidding. I like completely forgot what I was going to talk about because I was like holding the side and my body wasn't moving. My hands weren't moving. I'm like, well, this is stupid.
This isn't
so
me.
I walked out. And so that was the first thing. I was like, oh no, I never need one of those. I also subscribe to some kind of, and some of you might have been around, that I had to wear a suit if it was a keynote address. And I kind of forgot about this until I cleaned out that closet for the room. And I found these black suits that were dusty because I wore, and I remember distinctly one woman came to me in Florida and she said, you know, Lisa, you can put that suit on, but you're still Lisa. You know what I'm saying? It's like she was honoring that I thought I had to do it, but in a very gentle, loving, funny way was telling me, like, ditch the suit, bitch.
You know you're in Florida. Come on.
You don't need, like, you're still you. You're not tricking anybody by putting, you can't put the suit on the goo, but you can't take the goo out of the suit, I think is really probably what she said.
I did the same thing. I used to think I had to have the jacket and the tie because that's what I'd seen. And it was incredibly uncomfortable because it's not like who I am, right? The same thing you had. And the person who changed me, I mean, I had been thinking it, but I saw Mimi present.
Barefoot.
And barefoot. And she's amazing, of course. And I talked to her afterwards, and I just reminded her of this a couple of weeks ago when I saw her. And I said, you know, I love the fact that you just get up there and you're you. And she said, well, you're the keynote. You can be whoever the hell you need to be. And so I didn't wear a tie to another presentation after that. And the other thing I heard is especially from family child care providers, is that me and a tie put a wall between us.
Yes.
It made me. It was an intimidating thing because the people that see were tired, the licensing people, that kind of stuff.
True.
And so when you
were instantly categorized into the
and so it was easy to let go of that. So what's the piece of advice you take? Just be yourself. If you're the suit person, be that.
Totally. Yeah. But, and I think that's the thing too. I did the suit thing for about 2 or 3 years. So if I was asked to be a keynoter, and then it was funny because then I would go change. It was like somehow for the keynote I needed to do this, and then for the 3-4 breakout sessions I was in the jeans and the t-shirt.
So, like,
and all that.
You had your school clothes on, and then you put your play clothes on.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was like, forget it. And so the year transition, I remember I did an Indiana AUIC keynote in the suit. And then the next year I came out, and I actually somebody told me after that it was like I made the shift from the professional to the rock and roll star. I came out with, I still remember the outfit I had on. I had a black lacy tank top on, black stovepipe jeans, boots, and a big metal belt around it. And I walked out and I'm like, yeah, they told me I could ditch the suit. And it was like 2 years in a row that I had keynoted. And ever since then, I've been like, you know what? This is me. And this is what I bring to the table.
I went with, the first time I got rid of the tie and jacket, I went with black lace too.
You
talk
did?
About,
I knew. And
talk
lipstick
about
is the Bonnie Bell strawberry lip gloss.
talk about coincidence.
Quickie.
That's awesome. So what do you
the
got?
Other
you
stuff got is, well, the other stuff is more, I don't want to say the businessy end of anything because But maybe that's more of what it is. Yeah. You had said more, I think you said practical or logistic or something like that.
I don't know either.
But things like, and I'll just barf them off and you tell me if you have anything to add to that. You need to have a contract and you need to enforce it. And I don't care if it's one page or seven pages because it'll evolve. But you need to have some kind of an agreement that spells out what you're expecting, what you're going to get paid, where it's going to be. And it's that kind of that initial piece of paper that just, you don't want any surprises the day of anything. No. So you got to figure out what works best for you, because I can tell you what works best for me, which is that I collect a non-refundable deposit. So if you cancel, that's my compensation for you canceling. But the gig isn't booked until I get that. And then the balance due is payable on or before the date of service. And that is all clearly not only spelled out in the contract, but then in that information packet. So that initial call of, you know, what do you do and how do you do it? You got to kind of get lit. You got to let people know up front.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot
your
of
expectations.
It's nice to think. And I mean, a lot of people that are listening aren't at that place yet that they're getting paid to do this. But if you're going to get there, have that in mind, because it's great to think that, you know, everything can be done with an agreement and a handshake and via email.
Not.
But the more stuff is spelled out clearly, the fewer problems you have when it gets to be gig day.
And even if you're not getting paid for it, that's fine. I mean, there's tons
that
we
want to understand.
You still want to understand, you know, what are they going to provide for you? And that kind of gets into the rider. We call it the writer of these are my actual expectations. You know, I need an AV, I need a screen, I need a projector, you know, I need six tables across the front of the room, I need access to water, da 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 da. And it's evolved, of course, and has gotten more specific, which I've been told is very helpful. But you first have to know what you need, and then you need to let them know. And I can tell you when to say something. And then you need to let them know what you're needing. And then at some point before you arrive, not the morning, then you got to go over that with them.
Yes.
What? Come on, you're killing me.
You go through all the tables and everything, but you don't mention the chilled bottle of Grey Goose backstage.
No, that's in the writer.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
It's not in the contract. It's in the writer. The contract says we'll be responsible for all items in the writer, and then the writer has the blue M&Ms and the Avion and the chilled Grey Goose. So you know, I do charge a deposit because it's a commitment, you know, and I don't care if it's $5, you know, but it's just some kind of an acknowledgement that your time is valuable, which for sometimes people who leap into this initially, you know, we're good caregivers. We don't want anybody to be upset. We don't, you know, but you know, this is still your time and this is still your investment. You know, you want to make sure that there's a commitment and an understanding on both ends. You need to know what you need. What do you need to give 110%? And then it's totally acceptable to expect that to be provided for you. Clarify, never assume, like what you just said. You know, you can't just assume because they called you and said, will you come do this, that, you know, because also, I mean, people are human. Things change. You know, people get, you know, they lose their jobs, they move, they change, they forgot that they had this ball rolling, and then you call up and you're like, hey, are we still on for that evening? And they're like, whoa, who are you? And, you know, so never assume anything.
A couple of years ago, I had a group change the date of the event without telling me.
Oh.
And then got a hold of me about 3 weeks, before 4 weeks before it was supposed to happen. I'm like,
Well, can you cancel the other one?
Yeah, I had something else booked on that date. And I'm like, well, so I was able to find them somebody who had an open date who ended up going and doing a wonderful job. But it was a good thing. I think you were talking about know what you need. I think another thing we need to know, and I don't think we've touched on it, is know your stuff. And we've kind of alluded to it, but the fact is, I've seen a lot of presenters present on topics where they are not
experts
in the topic, or experts, I guess, in
quote unquote. Yeah.
Because if you're not confident about the material you're presenting, it is going to radiate out into that room, and make it hard for everybody. So make sure you know what you're talking about
and know your sources. This is a huge one for me. If you start quoting stuff or saying stuff, you might not need to give me I'm not expecting it right there in the context of it. I mean, it would be nice if it was in the handout or a little asterisk or something like that. But if you're throwing down some serious, like, stats or statistics or research, even if I follow up with you after, you got to be able to, you know, bring me back to that. To me, that's just a credibility.
Yeah,
a credibility
I mean, you don't want to be going off and citing the links to the research, the hyperlinks. You don't want to have those memories. But what? But just letting people know if you need more on this.
Like, and I'll use one of my examples. So, okay, so 40% of the schools have eliminated recess. This unfortunately has been true since roughly 96, 97. It went down to 30% for a while. It's coming back up 35 to 40. If somebody then after the gig came up to me and said, "Where did you get that?" I can provide that. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I don't need to tell you in the context of it unless I get a vibe that audience needs that. Yeah. And then I do, right? But that's getting into like techniques and strategy of presenting. But if you're going to be dropping stats, you need to be able to link somebody to your source. Know your sources. I mean, that's just good advice for anything. For those of you who do want to jump into it more full-time, maybe the shameless self-promotion, not being afraid of plugging yourself, having a business card, having an 800 number, being on social media, I think that's really important. And getting everything in writing. And I think the hardest part for people who make the initial leap into this is it is totally 100% acceptable to ask for a nominal fee, some kind of a stipend.
You got to figure that out.
And you do have to figure that out for yourself. But also remembering that things like, I'm going to expect you to copy the handouts, right? So that in theory could be something out of your pocket that you could, an in-kind. So maybe they're not able to pay you any money, but there might be other things that they're able to do. And always get to the venue at least an hour, if not 90 minutes before you start. Because you're able to fix almost anything in 90 minutes.
You can get things together. Yeah. I got a couple more. Don't read it.
No,
don't read it. If this is a quote you use, and you got to do the presentation two or three times before you have it memorized, or if it's a longer thing and you need to read something like that, that great. But I was at a presentation once, and the keynote read, probably spent 15 minutes reading a section out of her book.
Unless it's a book reading? And what did John Medina say? No more PowerPoints.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of no more PowerPoints, but at least if you're going to use PowerPoint, do it well.
No
more than 8 words on a slide. The fewer the words on a slide, the better. Sometimes just an image on the slide. There are great ways to do good PowerPoint, but most people don't do them.
Don't get fancy.
And I got,
Roll them in, or they drop
and
it.
When it comes to that, there's 2 books. Slideology is one of them, and Presentation Zen is another. And these are both great books. And another presenter book.
Lisa Murphy's writing them down.
Since Lisa was talking about know your stuff and have your sources, another one is The Naked Presenter, which is a great book.
Have you ever been naked and presented?
Well, presenting naked, in the way this guy talks about it, I think it's in this book, talks about
not
it.
Not the naked
is,
you're thinking
oh,
of.
It's presenting
sorry.
Naked. It's like what you do. It's going up with no slides. You just go up there and talk.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, the slides can't, because there are visual people out there. And so if you can do slides well, do them. But what most people do is they put 20 bullet points on one slide, and it's in a font people can't read. And they've got floofy clip art.
And then you read it to them. I could be doing that with a cup of coffee on my deck.
Yeah. And so if you're using slides, make it something that accentuates what you're talking about and isn't a repetition of that. I think another big thing that I'm becoming more and more a fan of is make your points with stories. And I think that's something both Lisa and I do all the time, because we humans, we're wired to connect with stories. I mean, sitting around the campfire back in our hunter-gatherer days was how we communicated and shared ideas, and people really do connect with the storytelling. And so you tell a story that makes the point, and then you do whatever you have to do to reinforce that point, and then you move on, because that's part of that entertainment thing too. When you can tell a story well, you're more apt to be able to hold that audience.
Yeah, people remember the story, right?
Yeah, it's something that...
The other thing I started doing lately, and I wasn't really conscious of it, but I ended up getting feedback that it was appreciated. Oh, that's okay. It's just a Harley, people. Calm down.
It's my... He took the baffles out. If you have a Harley and you took the baffles out, please don't move next to me. Come on, this guy starts that bike at 5:30 in the goddamn morning.
You're awake.
Well, I'm awake, but I don't want to be interrupted
by his darn
motorcycle.
I'm not quite awake.
You're not awake.
And then she does a and rolls over. And
I like the sound, but not at that time.
Listen to this, people. Are you hearing this motorcycle? Look, he can't just drive away.
He's warming it up.
Come on, guy, drive away.
It's 85 degrees. He's warming it up.
Drive away already, guy. Oh, we can talk over.
Okay.
I guess.
What I was gonna say.
Oh.
He heard you.
What an ass.
Oh, now he's going away.
Bye-bye.
Let's see how long it takes him to come back.
Oh, he's just coming in your driveway.
Yeah, he's probably coming over here to shoot me or something.
Okay, so the thing that I said I wasn't aware of, but it was brought to my attention, was that I started acknowledging who I was taking stuff from or learned stuff from. You know, so I was more, instead of just plopping something out there, I was mindful of starting to say, well, Jeff Johnson told me, or me and Jeff, or, you know, Bev taught us that. I was more mindful of attaching, I don't know, credit, for lack of a better word, to some of the points that really influenced my teaching style or even speaking, just being more mindful of kind of throwing it out there and linking it to my source.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it gives some.
Well, I think it's a nod. I think it's a respect. I think it's a sense of, you know, we didn't all just make this up one day,
street
right? That we're
cred
pulling
comes to mind that Jeff has said before.
Street, well, when, and sharing with other people. What do you mean by street cred?
Well, you
like,
know,
not a name drop. Like,
well,
that's
no.
different.
Well, no, but these people that
have
other people respect.
Books.
These people
yeah.
have influenced the thinking on this idea.
There you go.
And that's a valuable thing. I think another big one is know if you're going to have any kind of gear, if you're going to set up a computer or a microphone or a PowerPoint or whatever, know how to set the gear up, because the tech person, there might not be a tech person there depending on where you are. And if you need to know it, know how to use it. I've seen I've had presenters in front of me
if you don't know how to use the equipment, quite honestly, you shouldn't be using the equipment.
Exactly, because there are going to be times that you have to set it up yourself, and so that's something you need to practice too. Put it together. It's like you're putting you're in Vietnam and you're putting your M16 together 20 times in the dark blind folded, so you know how to take it apart and clean it. You
and
gotta
test it.
Yeah, yeah.
Test it. And I guess I mean I often will have these conversations with people who are looking to kind of make that leap and have speaking somehow be like either a next career for them or something. So sometimes maybe what my input to this conversation might be a little bit more technical. But you know, I bring my own microphone because I don't want to have to rely on somebody not knowing. And you know, when I told them one time I needed a microphone and they brought a karaoke machine and there's 5,000 people in the audience, you know, like at that point you're like, you know what, maybe I need to be a little bit more specific about what I mean.
What did you sing?
I didn't.
Oh.
No. 10 little hot dogs crying in the pan. The grease got hot and warm. So, no, that's a very, very valid point. And it's not related, but like if you have a carry-on item in the airplane and you can't lift it up over your head to put it in the carry-on section, then you really should not be bringing that on the airplane.
And that's not only a presenter skill. That's just a life skill.
Oh, my God. I can't stand that. And FYI, you're not allowed to bring a gallon of lotion on the airplane anymore. That's all I'm going to say about that.
And if you fly with plungers when you fly or dead squirrels in jars, you know,
get a note.
Yeah, have a note. Have a note from somebody. Anything else on the topic we want to throw out there? You got anything else?
I went through mine.
I think I got everything I had on my list covered.
Just
but
love it. You have to absolutely love it. Don't ever apologize for it. Get out there and do it. And if you want to keep doing it, just know that absolutely none of us sitting around this table right now kicked ass the first time that we went out there. Sharon Kroll was in my very first workshop. Do you know how scared shitless I was? Now, she's a really good friend now, and she knows the story about me, but I walked in. I think the room was set for maybe 25 or 35 people, and it was in California. Like, the whole Dallas story had happened, and this was like the first or second gig that I did after the Dallas story. And I'm like, and Sharon Kroll came in the back of my audience, and I'm like, crap.
Well, I had that happen 2 weeks ago. I'm halfway through a breakout session, and then Dan Hodgins is standing in the back of the room.
Oh, I would have been like, crap.
And I'm like, oh shit, Dan, you're throwing. I said it. I mean, I owned it, Dan. You're gonna throw me off my game, and it went right back to my thing.
Remember when I walked in your center that one time? I didn't know. I was just like, I heard about this guy. I'm gonna walk in.
I was too shy to go talk to you, so I'm glad you came over. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting in
the deck
podcasting.
How awesome is it that we're all like, I mean, we could have all those people around the table. That would be pretty awesome. I feel myself very honored that I could call on them as friends and colleagues.
Yeah, and we've had some of them here on the show already. This has been a fun time. I think we're 35 minutes into this episode already-ish. So if there's questions that come out after listening to this that we didn't cover, let us know, and we'll either cover them in a future episode or on the social media interweb stuff. This has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We'll be back on Monday with another show. Bye-bye.
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 And click. Having a hard time sleeping? Off your feed, feeling blah, blasé, down? Maybe you need more Lisa Murphy in your life. Check out ooeygooey.com and hunt her down on Twitter and Instagram. It'll make your life better.
Hey, we're starting a revolution. A play revolution. A playvolution. Get it? Come on over and check it out at www.myplayvolution.com. It's an online community for parents and early learning professionals who want to chat and share information and talk and educate themselves and educate others about what's going on in the early learning profession. Let's face it, Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter aren't as warm and cuddly as we might like them to be. This is your community, a place you're going to help create. Come on over. Don't be afraid. Check it out. Jump in. Support the community. Be the community. We need you. Got it? See you there. Thanks for listening to the Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. If you like the show, check out our other offerings, Shots, Lisa's Book Report, and Tom Copeland's Taking Care of Business. And we'd love it if you shared them with friends, left a comment at myplayvolution.com, and gave them 5 stars on iTunes. Thanks. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.